You can meet and hear Anthony Esselin, John Warwick Montgomery, Ryan Anderson, Bev Yonke, Mark Kaltoff, and Chris Rosebro at the 2018 Fall Issues Etc. Making the Case Conference, Friday, November 9th and Saturday, November 10th in Dallas, Texas. Early bird registration is $110. For more information, visit issuesetc.org. The Fall Issues Etc. Making the Case Conference, November 9th and 10th in Dallas.
But for Western man to know Christ and then to turn away from him, to have his whole civilization built upon the Christian faith and then to turn away from that, is suicide.
This is an outrageous and terrible abuse. Of course kids are resilient and God is gracious and God can work despite the terrible things we do to one another. But divorce is absolutely devastating to children.
It's not just that Jesus lays down his life for those who are innocent victims of senseless violence. It's that Jesus lays down his life for those who actively hated him.
Colorado trumpet players love Issues Etc.
It was one of those things that you could count on for generations. You could count on the fact that your doctor, wherever he was educated, whatever his specialty, whatever his level of competency, he had made a promise. He had taken an oath, and the oath came down to really three words: do no harm. And there were other things in the Hippocratic Oath, but nowadays that's not something you can take for granted or even assume when it comes to your physician. He may not be familiar with the Hippocratic Oath, except by way of maybe some ancient history about his practice of medicine. And he may have no intention whatsoever of keeping the spirit of the oath, even if he hasn't read the letter of it: do no harm. Greetings and welcome to Issues Etc. live on this Monday afternoon, September the 24th. I'm Todd Wilkin. Thanks for tuning us in. We're going to be talking about the death of the Hippocratic Oath and a California law allowing minors tax-paid transgender treatments. Wesley Smith will be our guest. A little bit later, Pastor Stanis Stanley joins us, a pastor in the India Evangelical Lutheran Church, to talk about a Hindu festival celebrating the god Ganesh. He is the Hindu god with a human body and an elephant head, and they dip him in water and leave him submerged. We'll find out what that's all about. Then Pastor Peter Bender joins us for part three of our series on catechesis today. What is the catechism and why do we have one? You can join us with questions or comments or call in number 1-877-623-MYIE. Our in-studio email address, talkback@issuesetc.org. Our Twitter address, @issuesetc. And the Issues Etc. listener comment line, 618-223-8382. Joining us to talk about the death of the Hippocratic Oath, Wesley Smith, Senior Fellow at the Discovery Institute Center on Human Exceptionalism and Consultant to the Patients' Rights Council, columnist for National Review Online and author of several books, including Culture of Death, The Age of Do Harm Medicine. Wesley, welcome back.
Thanks, Todd. I wish I could say I was happy to talk about this subject, because it isn't.
Well, you have written a lot about the Hippocratic Oath. And what I wonder is, nature abhors the vacuum. So if the Hippocratic Oath no longer is a principle for the practice of medicine in the United States or elsewhere, what has taken its place?
Let's not say has taken its place. Let's say is struggling to take its place. What we have, I think, is all around the world, in fact, on many different issues and issues you and I don't talk about, a collapse of institutions. And I think that what we're seeing in healthcare is a collapse of Hippocratic medicine and professionalism. What keeps the practice of medicine ethical, in my view, are the people who are working in the trenches, the doctors in the hospitals, in the clinics, the nurses, and so forth. But if you take a look at what the medical associations are advocating, if you take a look at what the bioethicists from the major universities who teach the doctors and nurses of tomorrow are advocating, you are seeing a complete abdication of Hippocratic principles, as you and I would understand it, in terms of do no harm. And of course, doctors don't take the Hippocratic Oath anymore, because the Hippocratic Oath had specific do not do certain things that this society wants to have done. For example, abortion, assisted suicide, those things are explicitly precluded by the Hippocratic Oath. But I think what you see trying and struggling to replace it is what might be called a utilitarian view of healthcare, that the purpose of healthcare is to prevent suffering as identified by the patient, not whether it's an objective form of suffering or even because you see the jurisdiction of healthcare expanding, to make sure that whatever the patient feels is necessary for his or her happiness that can be achieved through medical procedural means, that that is done. And so what we see when you say, well, we no longer follow do no harm, what you see is a complete disagreement between what constitutes harm in certain contexts. And you brought up that California, which I didn't know about until your producer let me know about it today, that California has passed a law that will pay for transgendered treatments for 12-year-olds and above. Well, one of those potential treatments is to prevent healthy, normal puberty. There are going to be doctors who would say, even if they accept, you know, transgenderism and gender dysphoria as a real legitimate condition, who are going to say, wait a second, I'm not going to stop a normal puberty of a 12-year-old child because they believe they identify with the sex that they were not born to be, not their biological sex. I'm not going to do that because to me that constitutes harm. I don't know what that's going to do for this child. This is unethical human experimentation. Or you might have a doctor saying, well, this child is miserable because this child feels that and identifies with a different sex than which he or she was born. If I don't prevent this puberty, it's going to make their life very difficult because they'll develop secondary sex characteristics of the sex that they don't identify as. And so that's doing harm. So we have a real struggle in our society now because we've become so morally polyglot. And because we've become so disagreeing about basic facts of biology, medicine, healthcare, and so forth, that both sides of that particular issue can think they're doing harm or not doing harm by doing the exact opposite things. And the issue that I see coming along is that because the people who would say stop puberty have control of the cultural agenda, and certainly in places like California have control of the legislature, they're going to force doctors who think that stopping puberty is a harm. They're going to force them to do it anyway or get out of medicine. This is the medical conscience issue we've discussed before, and it usually has been brought up around the issues of abortion. But now these issues are expanding because what the bioethicists are saying, utilitarian bioethicists, people like Ezekiel Emanuel, who helped create the Affordable Care Act, one of the most powerful and influential bioethicists in the world, he says that if a doctor is asked to do a legal procedure by a patient that will likely fulfill what that patient is looking for in that procedure, that doctor, as a part of patient-centered care, they call it, that doctor either better do it, find a doctor for the patient who will do it if that doctor is morally opposed, or get out of medicine. We are seeing authoritarianism creep into healthcare, and people who have the wrong, quote-unquote, idea of what constitutes harm, quote-unquote, can find themselves martyred in the name of either their religious beliefs or their moral conscience in the Hippocratic concept.
When did this begin? Around what particular practices or issues in medicine did the abandonment of the principle of doing no harm, or as you have said here, the redefinition of what doing no harm is, where did that begin as far as you can tell?
It began before I got into these issues, and as I look back, all I can say is it has to be the abortion issue. Because before Roe v. Wade and before abortion was being legalized, it was universally understood that doctors should not participate in that, and for the most part, abortion was illegal. There was a political fight in the late 60s and early 70s. A few states legalized it for certain purposes, and then the Supreme Court jumped in and said, well, we're just making it legal. That'll end the debate, which, of course, did just the opposite. But when you have a Hippocratic Oath that says, I will not give any woman a pessary to cause an abortion, and you have the medical institution saying doctors should participate in abortion, how do you keep the Hippocratic Oath? You start to change it into something else, something completely different. And so now doctors, when they graduate medical school, they will take an oath of some kind, but it's usually pablum, very watered down kinds of idea. I will not do anything that I consider. I mean, it's not specific. It's very general. And it's I've written a few articles if people want to look it up on Google, Wesley J. Smith, Hippocratic Oath. You can see the articles I've written. But the Hippocratic Oath is for the patient's protection. And that's what patients want it for, because they know I'm being protected. And when doctors don't take that kind of oath, particularly when that's specific, it's because the culture is changing, and the cultural leaders are trying to force healthcare to change with it.
Now, I'm curious about something you say when you've written recently about this, and that is the goal has changed from, and this is a very subtle thing because it doesn't sound like a bad thing at first, the goal has changed from either treating or doing no harm to ending suffering. Why, although that sounds great, why is that in fact a cowl for a rather sinister activity in medicine?
Well, for two reasons. One, if you're going to eliminate suffering, you're going to eventually get to the place where you agree to eliminate the sufferer. And that's the assisted suicide argument, the euthanasia argument, and so forth. But the second problem is that the concept of what constitutes, quote, suffering, close quote, becomes very malleable and elastic. And so we are now seeing, for example, just sticking with this gender dysphoria situation, where the idea of to eliminate suffering, you have to prevent a child's normal puberty, because if you allow a child to have normal puberty, that will constitute suffering. You can see where things can get very, very confused.
Has this found its way into not just the kind of end result of medical school or the way our doctors are being taught to think morally? Has it found its way into medical academia?
Oh, gosh, they're leading it. These kinds of shifts and changes are being led by the intelligentsia. They're being led by these cadre of bioethicists, which is why I wrote the book Culture of Death, The Age of Do Harm Medicine. And before that, the earlier version of that book was called Culture of Death, The Assault on Medical Ethics in America, because back in 2000, when I wrote the first edition, these were threats that I said, look, this is what these people are advocating. This is what the bioethics movement, if you will, even though it's not unanimous, but the mainstream view, they have this utilitarian view. When we did an update of the book in 2016, the publisher and I realized, good grief, you know, in the 16 years since the original edition came out, many of the things that I warned against have actually come to pass, to the point where many doctors are now practicing what I call do harm medicine, because I believe in the traditional concept of what constitutes harm. I think if you take a 13-year-old girl who believes she's a boy and you cut off her breasts because she believes she's a boy, you're harming that child. And that is beginning to happen. As low as 13-year-old biological girls are having their breasts cut off, mastectomies. Now, sometimes with gender dysphoria, by the time the child reaches an adult, they cease to have those feelings. Well, if that happens to a 13-year-old girl and you've cut off her breasts, and then let's say she's 20 and she no longer identifies as a boy, what are you going to tell her when she has no breasts? But we're so caught up in the politics of that particular issue that I think the issue of do no harm and wait a second, this is all very new. Maybe you should think very carefully before we do anything, at least to children, if you're going to really believe in a do no harm healthcare system.
Wesley Smith is our guest. He's senior fellow at the Discovery Institute Center on Human Exceptionalism. When we come back, well, for years he had been warning, and for years, he probably heard people saying he was an alarmist. What do you do when those things you've been warning of actually begin to happen?
Western civilization, infant baptism, transgenderism, a legal case for the resurrection, the First Amendment, revisionist history. Your favorite guests will address these topics at the Issues Etc. Making the Case Conference, November 9th and 10th in Dallas. Learn more at issuesetc.org. Making the Case November 9th and 10th in Dallas. Dallas Page, Fort
Worth Nights. Remember when education was about the fundamental skills of reading, writing, and arithmetic? And about reading great literature and studying history to give our kids a model for what it is to be a good person? Memoria Press's classical Christian curriculum offers that very model for your homeschool. Get $5 off your next order by using the coupon code LPR17. For more information, go to memoriapress.com. Memoria Press, a classical Christian education that works.
Contending for truth in an age of anti-truth. You're listening to Issues, Etc.
LCMS Disaster Response provides guidance and assistance to congregations who seek to proclaim the gospel and show mercy in the wake of disasters. We can bring capacity to your congregation through on-site assessment, volunteer training and congregation preparedness, and through grants direct to your congregation. For more information, follow us on Facebook, keyword LCMS Disaster Response, or visit our website at lcms.org/disaster. That's lcms.org/disaster.
Do you dread going to work out? Performance Fitness in Edwardsville offers a fun, supportive, tight-knit community and environment. Visit them on the web at performancefitness618.com or call 618-692-5063. Performance Fitness is the facility in the St. Louis Metro East where the focus is on member results, not membership numbers. 618-692-5063 or performancefitness618.com. Performance Fitness of Edwardsville.
Welcome back to Issues, Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. We're talking about the death of the Hippocratic Oath. Wesley Smith is our guest, senior fellow at the Discovery Institute's Center on Human Exceptionalism. Licensed clinical psychologist Dr. Beverly Yonke will be making the case for a Christian response to the transgender child at the Fall 2018 Issues, Etc. Making the Case Conference in Dallas, Texas. She'll be joined by Dr. Anthony Eslin, author of Out of the Ashes, Dr. Ryan Anderson of the Heritage Foundation, Dr. Mark Kultoff of Hillsdale College, Dr. John Warwick Montgomery of 1517 The Legacy Project, and Pastor Chris Roseborough of Fighting for the Faith. Attendance is limited to 400. Child care is free, courtesy of Wittenberg Academy. Learn more and register at issuesetc.org or give us a call at 618-223-8385. The Issues, Etc. Making the Case Conference Friday, November 9th and Saturday, November 10th in Dallas. Wesley, before the break, you were talking about when you went back to your book to revise it in 2016, all the things that you had been, or many of the things that you had been predicting actually were occurring then. I imagine you were tempted to rename the book I Told You So.
Yeah, but my wife told me people don't like that kind of a fellow, so I think my wife was right, but I did tell you so.
What kind of things were you warning about? And today, what's your list for things that you say, look, folks, please be forewarned, this is coming?
One of the first things I ever warned about, before I got into these issues, I was a co-author with Ralph Nader on a lot of on consumer advocacy books. We wrote about airline safety together. We wrote about corporate law together. And before that, I did some, he introduced some books I wrote that were more in a consumer advocacy venue. As I was writing the last book, I ended up co-authoring with Ralph, didn't know it at the time. I had a friend commit suicide under the influence of the Hemlock Society. And I wrote a piece in Newsweek, which came out in 1993, June 28th, as a matter of fact. I remember the date because it changed my life. I was so upset with what happened to my friend that she had been gulled by this it's now called Compassion and Choices, but at the time it was more honestly named the Hemlock Society, and they had proselytized my friend Francis, and this is, in, by the way, the introduction to my book, Forced Exit, Euthanasia, Assisted Suicide, and the New Duty to Die. This is in the introduction to that. I was so upset that they had proselytized her to kill herself, which is basically what happened, and taught her how to do it, gave her moral permission and taught her how to do it, that I wrote a piece in Newsweek called The Whispers of Strangers, and that's available if people want to read it online. Just Wesley J. Smith, Whispers of Strangers, it'll come up. that I wrote what I thought was going to be a one-off piece warning against this euthanasia and assisted suicide movement. And one of the things I wrote at the time was, if we're not careful based on the value system of this kind of movement, we're going to end up offering organ harvesting, and I called it as a plum to society, meaning giving society a stake in sick and disabled and mentally ill people killing themselves because we can take their organs. Well, as you said, I was called an alarmist. I got the reason, one of the reasons I got into this mess is because after that piece came out, I was bombarded with hate mail, which shocked me because I thought what I wrote was not controversial. And this is back, Todd, when you had to take a piece of paper and either use a pen or a typewriter to put symbols on the paper, fold the paper, put it in something called an envelope, and actually pay by buying a stamp to tell the person how much you hate him, you hope he gets cancer and suffers, right? And I was so shocked by the depth of hate mail and the bitter anger and vituperation aimed in my direction, because I was warning against this movement that I thought would prey on the vulnerable and still do, that I began to work on these issues as a calling, perhaps, but I just felt it was my obligation to do that as a moral human being. And this organ harvesting thing always kind of haunted me. And for a while, it didn't happen. And I thought maybe we're going to escape that. Then in Belgium, they started doing it. I saw a medical, in an organ transplant journal, a respected organ transplant journal, a letter saying, well, we've just organ harvested after euthanasia, voluntary on both ends. This proves it can be done ethically. And basically, the letter said, we did it, and therefore it's ethical, in essence. And I thought, oh boy, here we come. And then there was about a year later, there was another medical journal, a transplant journal, dispassionately. I mean, it was sterile. And I don't mean that in the good sense, in a disgusting, non-judgmental sense of amorality, where they said four people were brought into a hospital. They were infused with poison. They were then wheeled, after they died, they were wheeled into a operating theater and their organs were harvested. And so they wanted to see how well the organs went, whether it worked. And they said, oh, look, it works. The organs maintained and so forth and so on. And I looked at what were the conditions these people had. Three of them had neuromuscular disabilities and one was mentally ill. The mentally ill person's mental illness was self-harming. So the remedy, the do no harm of self-harming when they're not physically ill, but they're cutting themselves or harming themselves, was to kill them and then harvest their organs. And I thought to myself, I can't think of anything more horrific. You're telling somebody who's having a terrible, terrible time getting through the night because of mental illness that their deaths have greater value than their lives. That's a horrible thing, and nothing more dangerous than that, than accepting that society accepts that. And so I began following how in the Netherlands and in Belgium now, and there's been one case in Canada, of organ harvesting after euthanasia. And then recently, on September 6th, as a matter of fact, the New England Journal of Medicine. Now, I want people to understand why this is really important. The New England Journal of Medicine is the most respected medical journal in the world. You had two bioethicists and a doctor saying, well, where euthanasia is legal, you know, right now they euthanize them, wait till they die, and then take their organs. Well, that means some organs might not be as well off as they would otherwise be. What we should do is change the law to allow the killing act on euthanasia to be the organ harvest itself. In other words, they're saying that when somebody wants to have euthanasia where it's legal, put them into an anesthetic state so they don't feel pain, and then the killing act would be the taking of the organs themselves. This is, to me, a state of beyond evil, because you're treating that person as an organ farm, and you're also turning a healing area of healthcare, you know, the gift of life, into sometimes killers if you did that. And I want to emphasize that's not happening now, but it is being advocated in the New England Journal of Medicine. And you're turning doctors who are healers, who take organs that have been the gift of life from dead people. It's called the dead donor rule. You cannot take a vital organ unless the person is dead, and you cannot have the organ taking as the cause of death. That's the dead donor rule. That is what the New England Journal of Medicine published without criticism, without any pushback, without even a rebuttal, that should be allowed where euthanasia is legal. And when you get the New England Journal of Medicine talking about it, that's as mainstream intellectual power of the organized healthcare system, organized medicine, as it gets. And that should scare the heck out of everybody.
What's a short list, but what's on your list now, things that you are warning where people are saying, come on, Wesley, you're crazy, or you're an alarmist? What's on your list now?
Medical conscience is really number one on my list, where doctors are going to be forced to violate their religious beliefs, in other words, commit sins, if a patient wants certain controversial procedures, such as abortion, assisted suicide. We've already talked about gender dysphoria, things of that sort. Because you see the bioethics community almost in lockstep saying, doctors, you are basically not the professionals you once were. You're technocratic order takers. And what they call patient-centered care, I think that's a misnomer because of how they're using it. But it's up to the doctor to do what the patient thinks will give them a benefit if the medical procedure could actually do that. So I think that's huge. And it could, and the attempt really, Todd, is to drive pro-lifers out of healthcare and out of medicine. They don't want doctors sending the message, I'm not going to do this abortion because it's wrong. I'm not going to do this assisted suicide because it's wrong. I'm not going to cut off a 13-year-old girl's budding breasts because she's going into puberty because she's got gender dysphoria. I'm not going to do that. They want to drive people like that out of healthcare. They also don't want, in my view, because I keep hearing now from pro-life kids who are very bright and want to go to medical school and nursing school, they're finding that if they reveal they've been involved in pro-life activities, often they don't get in. So there is a real utilitarianism that is sweeping the, in my view, the people who are in charge of the institution itself. I said earlier in this interview, what keeps healthcare ethical, in my view, today are the doctors and the nurses and the pharmacists and the midwives and the people who work in the system itself, in the trenches of healthcare, the people who are really there for patients. What is pushing medicine away from that, to me, is the establishment, the intelligentsia, utilitarian bioethicists that predominate in this field. And there is a contest that has not been lost yet. And the reason I try to write what's in these medical journal articles, because if you want to see the future that is planned for us, you go to the medical journal articles, because that's how public policy is created. First, it happens in this discourse above public vision, because the New York Times or the local paper doesn't say, well, look what the New England Journal of Medicine wrote about. And once there's a consensus there, there might be a court case, and then they'll testify in court in favor of these new agenda items, or they'll help write legislation in states. I'm sure there were some bioethicists involved in that California law you told me about, where they're going to pay for transgender treatments 12 years old and up. And it's important that people be aware of this, but the contest is not lost. For the Hippocratic value system to predominate, we have to cast a light on these issues, and that's what I'm trying to do.
Wesley Smith is Senior Fellow at the Discovery Institute Center on Human Exceptionalism. He's a consultant to the Patients' Rights Council, columnist for National Review Online, and author of several books, including Culture of Death, The Age of Do Harm Medicine. You can purchase this book and learn more about the Discovery Institute Center on Human Exceptionalism at our website, issuesetc.org. Click Listen on Demand. Wesley, keep up the good work.
Thank you, Todd.
When we come back, we're going to spend some time with Pastor Stanish Stanley. There is a Hindu festival celebrating the god Ganesh. It's going on. We'll find out its history and its meaning and its place in the practice of Hinduism. Pastor Stanley is a pastor in the India Evangelical Lutheran Church. He'll be with us right after the break.
Hey, Todd. What have our listeners noticed first when visiting the LPR studios?
Definitely the small size and the dirt.
Well, not anymore. Thanks to our friends at the Cleaning Authority. They've turned this man cave into a space that meets even our wives' approval.
Whether it's our office or your home, the Cleaning Authority is your cleaning service provider in the St. Louis area.
To schedule a free estimate or to find out more, visit thecleaningauthority.com. Thecleaningauthority.com.
An average of 20 military veterans kill themselves every day. Project Operation Barnabas is a network of LCMS congregations who reach out to veterans and their congregations and their communities with the gospel of Jesus Christ. Operation Barnabas is a program of LCMS Ministry to the Armed Forces. Find out more at lcms.org/armedforces. Serving those who serve. LCMS Ministry to the Armed Forces. lcms.org/armedforces.
It's difficult for others to know how to be a part of another person's grief in a tragic event such as a miscarriage.
Deaconess Catherine Ziegler-Weber, editor of the Issues Etc. Book of the Month for September, Never Forsaken, God's Mercy in the Midst of Miscarriage.
But as Christians, we have a more significant death that unifies us, and that's what we have to cling to, is the cross.
Learn more about Never Forsaken at issuesetc.org.
Mount Zion Lutheran Church in Greenfield, Wisconsin, is a congregation of those gathered by the Spirit of the Lord around His saving word and sacraments. At the center of our life together is the divine service of the risen Jesus, the Lamb of God who was slain, who takes away the sin of the world. If you are in the Milwaukee area, we invite you to share with us in our Lord's gifts of forgiveness and new life. Services are on Saturdays at 5 p.m. and Sundays at 9 a.m. For more information, visit our website at mountziongreenfield.org.
Talk radio for the thinking Christian. You're listening to Issues Etc.
Many Lutheran pastors outside of the U.S. receive little or no seminary education. Luther Academy provides theological triage through conferences, books, and journals. Help support Luther Academy by making a tax-deductible donation at lutheracademy.com or call 260-452-2211. Serving Lutheran pastors to the ends of the earth. Luther Academy, 260-452-2211 or lutheracademy.com.
Listen to chapel services live, weekday mornings from Concordia Theological Seminary in Fort Wayne, Indiana. Morning chapel from Kramer Chapel. Live, weekday mornings at 9 Central, 10 Eastern, 8 Mountain, and 7 Pacific at issuesetc.org.